He has to pay the iron price.
He has to pay the iron price.
He'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn Payne the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar, Dargaris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar, Morghulis, all men must die.
Happy Father's Day, Tywin. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, brought to you by baldmove.com. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Jim, what the fuck did you think of tonight's episode called Children?
Also subtitled, How to Chain Your Dragons.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it started out kind of slow. I was a little worried. And about the time that we got to Brienne and the Hound, I was like, okay, I'm sold. I'm in.
Yeah, I had like three or four comments that I started on Facebook that I couldn't tear my eyes off the screen long enough to finish.
And during one of that scene?
No, during the whole episode.
Okay.
And during one of it, I was going to say, you know, the book purist in me is angry, but the man with eyes watching the television and saying, shut the fuck up, this is awesome. Like,
okay,
I almost think I've said this a couple times in a season when I interviewed Gwendolyn Christie, who plays Brienne. I asked her a question about how she feels about feminism and Game of Thrones and charges against Martin of misogyny in the show, and she gave me this like, you're fucking stupid look that intimidated the hell out of me. And I almost think that now I understand, because she's like, you're going to see a 5-minute scene of I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar.
Sure.
And it was just, because they just, the Hound has always been this big Darth Vader dude, and I've mentioned it many times, and every fight he's just this hulking beast.
Mm-hmm.
And Brienne was right there with him, man.
Yeah, and she's not any, if much, shorter than him.
That's what I'm saying.
I think they're about the same size.
Physically, when she's got the armor on, she's swinging a sword. It's awesome.
In
real, non-adulterated sense of the word.
Sure. Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed by that fight. And I thought, immediately when they drew swords, I was like, someone is not getting out of this alive.
Yeah.
There's no way this fight ends without a death. And I'm glad that the Hound died. I feel like his character had run its course, mostly, and Brienne still has a lot of potential.
Right on.
So, bring it.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Do you think that... I mean, the fight just seemed like, I would say it went on for 5 minutes. It felt like it went on for 5 minutes, and that's not an indictment of it. I don't think it's too long. It's just
no. Mm-mm.
Every single time I thought that, oh, well, here's the end, then the Hound grabbed the Valyrian steel blade with Catelyn Starked the blade, and it went on for another couple of minutes. And
yeah,
it was amazing.
Can I get you to speculate a little bit on why he did that? I mean, beyond his death, there's obviously no book knowledge. So why did he not want to kind of take the terms that Bran was offering him at all? Like, because Bran didn't want to kill him. And
so, first of all, I will say that this doesn't happen in a book.
This does not happen in the book?
No.
Oh, shit.
In fact, this season finale really surprised me in how it went with a lot of things. It kind of abandoned the whole, we'll come back together at the end of the season and meet you back.
Yeah,
and I think I'll also say that I think this is the best season finale in Game of Thrones history, and this closes the best season in Game of Thrones history. Having said all that, I feel like at the end he genuinely thought she was a Lannister shill, that was going to not do right by Arya.
Okay.
And that he had enough affection for Arya that he was going to protect her. That he thought he could do the best job protecting her than anyone, especially a Lannister shill.
So when he grabs that Lannister steel and it shows the close-up, it's not just showing his hands bleeding, it's reinforcing the Lannister steel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he said that, and that's Lannister how the fight
gold,
started.
Valyrian steel.
Yeah.
It's all
he wasn't having none of that, and he was going to try to save or die trying, which is interesting because it makes it more tragic, the fact that she basically did not return that affection.
Did not return that affection. Yeah, what do you mean?
Well, he asked for mercy. Something that even the Hound...
Oh, we switched to Arya. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I thought we were still talking about Brienne.
No, no. Okay. I'm saying that I think that and that's just my interpretation. I don't know that I'm right because, again, this particular scenario didn't happen. Arya and the Hound parted ways very similarly. But okay. I feel like that and I wasn't sure if they were going to change that about the books, but it does seem like the Arya the whole time I don't know if she hates the Hound, but she certainly doesn't see him with any kind of affection like she did Syrio or any of the others. I mean, she's glad that he kept her alive and she's got a professional respect for him, but she's not going to give him the gift of mercy. And him taunting her about the butcher's boy was not the way to go about that, getting that.
No, and it's certainly, I think, fitting that she didn't, and fitting that she takes his silver from him, because that's exactly what he did to that farmer.
He's a dead man. He doesn't need it.
Exactly.
I was mildly surprised
fitting.
I was mildly surprised to see him kind of resist that.
I think he got it, though. I think he understood, like, exactly why she did that and the point she was making.
Okay.
In the end. I mean, it's not going to help him with his femur sticking out of his leg.
pretty bad news. The thing is, does this episode make you feel better about episode 9?
No. Episode 9 is just completely Jon Snow fighting off Mance, and this episode actually, I think, might have made it worse for me.
Really?
Because I don't understand what the fuck Stannis was doing up there. Like, he could have taken this... I don't know what size army he has at this point, but it's obviously enough to challenge and intimidate.
It's big.
Mance.
I mean, it's with all the money that he bought, that he could buy. He
got a lot of coin from Braavos.
30,000-40,000 guys, 10,000 knights.
Maybe. My only question is, like, what the fuck is he doing up there? Because there was no indication that that's where he was headed.
Oh, I just totally disagree. Starting last season when. I mean, this is something that I've been worried about being on the back burner this whole season.
Okay, maybe I'm just missing it.
It didn't make sense, but the climax of last season was Davos getting the letter from the Raven message from Aemon, Master Aemon, that he sent all throughout the realm saying that the Castle Black needs all the Lord's attention because it's being surrounded by wildlings, et cetera, et cetera. He's the only one that heeded that call. The problem the whole season is he was flat fucking broke.
Sure.
And didn't have any men, so... It's always been his intention to go to the north because that's, like Melisandre said and like Davos both said, that's what a king does. He protects the realm. He does not do it at the expense. He does not do it at the expense of his personal pride.
Okay. I mean, I might be able to buy that. It just seems like Mance has a bigger army, for one. I don't think that Stannis has 100,000 dudes up there boats.
But what can 10,000 mounted knights do against 100,000 wildlings?
Some damage, no doubt.
I know. I think they rout them.
You think so?
Did you see that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that was a classic pincher maneuver where, I mean, the organization and the skill that went beyond, to bring those guys there and have them meet at the point. And, you know, there's the wildlings horses.
I get
and...
it. They're good, but they're outnumbered 10 to 1.
I think they're outnumbered more like 3 to 1.
Okay. Well, it depends on how many guys they have. We have no fucking clue.
No, again. But
might have 90 guys, and that was everything.
I'm just saying that 100,000 wildlings against 200 Night's Watch, bad news. 100,000 wildlings versus 30,000, you know, 20,000 footmen. Yeah, 10,000 knights. Maybe see that.
Yeah,
then it's a whole other thing.
So, especially, I guess my question was,
especially since Stannis could really just, you know, he's got the wall to fall back on. I mean, what the, he could fully garrison every fucking castle. I mean, they could make that wall impregnable.
Yeah, they can. That's a really good point. I didn't even think of that. I was just wondering what he was doing up there, but I guess if that was his whole intention in the first place,
yeah.
I just don't see why he doesn't go to King's Landing and fuck shit up there. But you know, if his honor outweighs his right to the throne, I guess, or his perceived right to the throne.
Plus, King's Landing's sure. been. I mean, it's yes, and I think that's why there's a lot of affection amongst book readers for Stannis is because he talks the talk, but he also walks the walk, unlike all the other lords and ladies of Westeros.
That makes a lot of sense. One of the other things that you should probably guess that I was not keen on was this stupid tree. going up to the tree was fucking awesome.
Okay. Like,
skeletons popping out of the ground, Army of Darkness style, and attacking
Jason
people.
Jason Argonauts.
Was perfect. I loved it.
In another mobile Hodor suit Gundam.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Brand battle. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, grabbing the skeleton by its eye sockets to bring.
But what does that do to a skeleton?
I'm just saying it's a convenient handhold.
It is. It is.
Grab them right by their skull sockets. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Using leverage on you, bitch. Off my back.
But then once they got into the tree, it's like, okay, so the skeletons can't go in there. Why? Because the power of the tree makes their power useless. And why does it make their power? Well, don't worry too much about that. Just know that it's true. Ugh, okay. Well, I have no way to speculate on anything that's going to happen there because fucking fire of rain could come out of the sky and melt all of the north. I have no idea.
I'm just grinning that the man who had no problems with skeletons shooting out of the ground Apollo rockets is saying, how can these things vaporize on entering a magic cave? It makes no sense.
All right. Skeletons are really fucking cool. How about that?
It's the dude sitting on the tree stump thing looked kind of like the last knight from the crusade.
Okay.
That's presiding over the false grails. I mean, I will talk about that in the main cast. I was a little disappointed in that. But I am excited to see Bran's storyline kind of come to fruition and see what they do with that next season.
Mm-hmm. Going back real quick.
No more Lord of the Rings style trekking through endless snow and stuff. Yeah. I mean, they're at the destination now. What?
So, yeah. What is that going to do for them? They got here. How does it help them?
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things, going back to the wall real quick, that I was excited to see is when Stannis showed up, it shows Jon Snow looking at Melisandre.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope he kills her. Okay. I really, really want Jon Snow to be the one to put her down.
All right. Mildly interesting.
This is bullshit. I'm killing the Red Queen, whatever her name is.
Okay.
How about Dany?
What did you think of Dany?
I thought it was maybe a little bit of justice for her, like seeing that she's been neglecting her dragons. They've taken out a child. She didn't even think about the population of this place outside of, I'm just going to free these people and let them do whatever the fuck they're going to do after I free them and totally fuck up their lives.
No, it was, that whole sequence was basically a Bryn versus the Hound kick to the crevice sequence for her. It's like, oh, you freed the slaves? Well, what about the old dudes that, you know, are getting...
shafted. There are more logistics to it than just going in and saying no one can be a slave anymore.
That's right.
That's not the end of it.
Once you're done crowd surfing, you actually have to figure out how to do things. And oh, by the way, your dragons that are out of control are not. Now it's not just costing you gold that we can make funny jokes about the goat scam, the great goat scam of Meereenese.
Yeah.
Now it's real. There's blood on hands. And I thought it was about as moving a scene involving a bunch of CGI creatures can be when she went and chained them up and then left them there.
That part didn't... I don't see why they made that so dramatic. It's like Do you leave your dog at home when you go to do something?
But these are not just her. I mean, these, I do believe, if I can steal Tackley's
thunder
a little bit. It's
exactly the same thing, but okay, whatever.
These are her, I mean, okay. Imagine a cat lady with her three cats at home.
Mm-hmm.
And how attached she is to these.
And she's got to go to the grocery store. What does she do with the cats?
No, I'm saying, then imagine that these cats were magically born of a funeral pyre of her dead husband and unborn child. And these are the last things that she's got. And also her hopes for, I don't know, conquering whatever the hell she's wanting to conquer, this cat lady. I mean, Dani's a cat lady times 1,000. She's a dragon lady.
Yeah, I guess I don't view it that way. I just view them as pets and...
Well, you're wrong. You're objectively wrong. These are her children. She said it as much. She's mother of dragons, for God's sake. Plus,
mother of dragons.
Plus, if you just purely look at it with your cold, half-existent heart, this is also her hope to one day reclaim her birthright, which is the throne of the Iron Throne of Westeros.
It doesn't seem like she's treating them that way, though. It seems like the Unsullied. It seems like the Unsullied and these slaves, these ex-slaves, are all her new hope. She's been completely ignoring her dragons for an entire season.
I don't think she's ignored them. I think they've just gotten out of her control,
and she's ignored them. Have we seen them? I mean, the only time we've seen them is to burn a goat and get chained up. It's like,
but we haven't seen Dany a lot this season. I mean, she basically sacked the city.
She didn't even know where they were.
Well, like, she doesn't know where one of them was.
Where's my dragon?
She lost.
Oh, God, I forgot I have a dragon. Oh, shit.
She lost track of the big black one. Sure.
I don't know. They're just not portraying it as these are her children, that she, like, you don't let your child go wander the countryside. But you kind of keep a leash on it.
What if your children are, like, vicious teenage dragons, man? These are not three-year-olds you can just put leashes on anymore.
I get it, but you've got to do something, and she wasn't apparently doing anything. She didn't even know where they were.
Well, that is definitely a conundrum that they are setting up as a conflict for next season. Has been basically relying on the fact that they themselves view her as their mother, but that's not enough. And now that they're getting bigger and powerful, she has to actually know what the fuck to do with this. And no one does. In living memory knows anything about dragons.
Yeah.
And no, apparently they have some unique care needs. You know, they're lactose intolerant. You got to feed them gluten-free. You got gluten-free bread on fire. It's crazy. Tree nut allergies. Just a lot that you need to know, Jim. A lot that you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, she needs a manual.
What else we need to talk about?
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Thank you.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Oh, well, what else happened? There was some other minor event that happened.
Yeah, I mean, near the end, there's exactly what I called. I mean, I totally fucking called that Jaime was going to team up with Varys, and they were going to get Tyrion out of there. I thought it would happen before Trial by Combat, but...
Well done.
It did happen.
So what did you think about that sequence? What did you think about Jaime freeing him? What did you think about his decision to go settle some scores with Tywin? The discovery in the bed? The way he handled that? I don't want to get into full cast territory, but I'm just curious.
I know. There's a lot of this stuff that I want to bring up in full cast. A couple of things that I will talk about. First of all, that shot where Tyrion is killing Shay, and then after he kills her and it pans over to her, that's absolutely just a stunning work of cinematography.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And you can't pull it off without the work of Peter Dinklage. So congratulations once again to Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Just ruling the scenes.
Yes.
Like his father rules King's Landing.
His privy.
The other thing I want to talk about is Jaime rescuing Tyrion. I think the impetus for that is Cersei. I think Cersei coming back to him. Busy in the King's Guard chamber, whatever that is.
Interesting scene that, you know, it seems like there's a lot of interest from the Facebook thread on how that recontextualizes the previous scenes.
Sure.
My response is it doesn't. It just highlights more how much they fucked it up. But, you know, I'm willing to roll with the, you know, retcon of Jaime. I think that's the way to go forward here. But
sure. I mean, it's clear that once she decided that she wanted him again, he wanted her.
And there again, I'm really conflicted as a book reader because that didn't happen that way in the book either.
Oh, okay.
So, shit.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was an effective way to get him, like, Cersei defies her father and tells Jaime that, and then Jaime decides to do the same thing. Like, Well, if she can do it, I can do it, and I'm going to help Tyrion out of this situation.
Tywin being dead does seem to blow next season wide open.
It does. It does.
I mean, Cersei is now going to be with her son. She's still queen regent. In fact, she's queen
not gonna
regent.
Marry Loras.
She's queen regent without Tywin and Tyrion to govern her.
That's true. All she's got is Jaime, who has not been very effective at convincing her to do what he wants.
And it's an open question how good a leader he is anyway.
Sure, sure. He's a good swordsman, or was a good swordsman. It's also an open question who's going to be the hand of the king now.
Very, very open question.
I think it could be Jaime. Do you need two hands to be the hand of the king?
You just need one.
You just do it with one, okay.
You just need one. There's not two hands on that emblem, it's just the one.
I don't know who else would do it at this point, so.
Yeah, so there... a lot of consternation amongst book readers because, again, I feel like there's a lot of being just the unsettled feeling that, oh, shit, we don't necessarily know everything that's going on. That things are different from the books. There are some iconic scenes here that were very different. Hmm. And all I can say is, you know, take a deep breath. Ask yourself whether the gaps that we saw in the material tonight cannot be filled next season with some monologues by... Kit Harington and
Hodor.
And Hodor and, you know, 20 Hodors can say 1,000 words.
Well, actions speak louder.
And Peter Dinklage and, you know, I have gotten pissed off at the Double D's enough to know that I usually look foolish at the end of it. And they're doing something that I thought was, I mean, blending in this Feast and Dances of Dragons material into the Storm of Swords book, it is jam packing the season with so many awesome moments. It's hard to argue with that. I feel like next season we can worry about next season, you know, whether maybe the Winds of Winter, dear God, should be out by then, and we can kind of leapfrog and see where things are going. But I feel like they've earned my trust. And if something didn't get mentioned that I thought was important, maybe it's not that important. They'll have some clever way to reintroduce it next season. And it, you know, so I guess there's nothing they can do if, like, you wanted Tyrion and Shay to work out this one particular way, or you wanted Tyrion and Jaime's parting to be this one way. There's nothing they can do to obviously go back and make that happen. But I'm betting on the double D's that they can keep the ship headed in the right direction.
Okay.
But, you know, we'll have a spoiler section Tuesday that we can talk all about our book reader concerns and our book reader disappointments. And we'll have a season wrap up next week where we'll talk about a lot of differences between the books and the show, and have another spoiler section where we can talk about, our fears and hopes for next season too. Have I left anything out, Jim?
Just the very end when Arya goes to Braavos. She cashes in her one big favor.
Yep.
For a cabin on a boat.
Yep.
Seems like she could have maybe gotten a little more out of that, but whatever. So, for some reason, she wants to go to Braavos. I feel like that's a pretty safe place for her. So I'm glad to see her go.
Sure. Why do you think she's going to Braavos?
Because that's where the boat said it was going.
Sure. Sure.
And she got on that boat.
Okay.
So I assume they're not lying to her.
Yeah,
face.
I'll have to do some reading and stuff to see, because there'll be some stuff we talk about in the full cast. I just didn't want to accidentally spoil anything. I'm pretty sure they've established something that I want to talk about, but it was back in season two.
Oh.
And I've read a lot of books since then and watched a lot of television. And I can't rely on you to remember something from second
Hell
season.
No.
So
okay.
Anyway, anything else we need to talk about?
No, I think that's it.
Well, if you'd like to get in on the feedback, which I'm sure is going to be massive, and we'll have 2 weeks to plow through it, do so at gameofthrones.baldmove.com. You can get in our show watches if you want to put in your two cents there. Please, no book spoilers on the public threads on facebook.com/baldmove. And you can talk to Jim if you're a non-book reader on Twitter @baldmove.
Yeah.
And we will be back in 2 days, Tuesday early evening, with the full cast.
Okay.
And until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim. See you then. Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn, Payne, the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm going.